Hello, my name is Divya Ravi Kumar Grant, and I'm doing this interview on behalf of the Equality, Diversion and Inclusion Committee for the University of Galway. So we're going to do this interview with a few different speech and language therapists to understand their experiences coming through college and also in the profession of speech and language therapy. So Abby, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, thanks, Divya. Yeah, my name's Abby Alcorn. I'm a senior speech language therapist based in Kilkenny, and I work in community care with adults. I also have experience in the acute care setting with adults too.
Great, thank you. And why did you choose speech and language therapy as a career?
You know, I was actually interested in doing dietetics or psychology initially. And I went to a boarding school in Dublin and became very good friends with a girl from Japan who moved there in transition year, and she had little to no English. So yeah, just yes, funny really. Over time, you know, I'd end up helping her with various English consonant sounds that she was having difficulty with, and enjoyed it so much. I thought there must be a career somewhere in this area. And just from then doing a bit of research, came across speech and language therapy. It had never been on my radar before that. And obviously, you know, once I got into it, I realized that it's so much more broad than just speech sound production. But yeah, I'm really blessed to be in a career, you know, that I really enjoy and feel really fulfilled in.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just you said, I'm actually a dietitian. I went straight into doing my PhD after dietetics, so I never practiced. I'm actually still finishing my PhD now, but yeah, I have worked as a research dietitian. It's just funny because you said it. And I do think with allied health, that can happen where like something kind of some experience kind of makes it more clear to you. But it's like often because it's not medicine or nursing, it's not like something at the fore, like, you know, a big emergency medical situation or something. It's something kind of that, you know, happened to you more periodically. Like for me with food, you know, I'd had my own stuff with food that I'd kind of been considering and thinking about growing up, and it kind of fed into dietetics. But I'm just wondering, like, if you were considering other allied health, had nobody told you about speech and language therapy, or was it that like, as in, had you never heard of it before? I'm just curious because you'd heard of dietetics.
Do you know, I actually when I was in transition year, I was lucky we had work experience, which I think a lot of schools do. But I'd actually been to a career guidance counselor outside of school, because I just yeah, I was just kind of going through a phase where I really wanted to know, you know, what direction to kind of set myself in. And through just various different, you know, aptitude tests and various things, she really got me down the path of allied health professions, and then through looking through a few of those, it was dietetics just stood out to me. I was always my mother was very interested in nutrition, so I suppose from her as well, I had some sort of an interest in it, and I'd done some work experience in a in Holland and Barrett in a health food shop, so that's how it got me down the dietetics path. But I suppose I felt I would enjoy it, but I wasn't as passionate about it as when I then discovered speech and language therapy.
Yeah, there's something really interesting about finding something that organically, though, you know, I suppose when you know, I can see what you mean, as in there were building blocks there with the guidance counselor and Holland and Barrett, but like when it comes to like meeting a person that requires this experience and requires, you know, as in a bit of help in with regards to, you know, getting to terms with languages, even the way that, you know, I don't know yourself if you have that. For me, my family are Tamil, so they're from the south of India, and we had two languages in the house when I was growing up. And even the way that you speak it, trying to explain that to my husband now is very, very difficult because it's like you need a different kind of tongue to say these things. It's basically what I'm trying to say. So, you know,
Absolutely.
it's an interesting process for somebody, I think, as well. Like if you're kind of approaching it from somebody that's not speaking English and just appreciating how difficult it can be to learn a language as well.
Absolutely. My mother is Irish. She's from Longford originally, and my father's from Sierra Leone in West Africa. So he would have grown up, you know, in a tribe called the Kisii tribe. So he actually grew up speaking a number of languages, and We lived in Sierra Leone until I was about 5 and a half. So when I lived there, I used to speak Creole English, and as well as English, at home. But it was always a sort of disappointment of mine that when we moved to Ireland, then we moved when I was about 5 and a half, and there was a civil war in Sierra Leone at the time, and so we unexpectedly moved to Ireland and moved to my mum's family initially. And to her parents, but it was always a disappointment of mine that they didn't raise us bilingually. And especially now, in my profession, I just think it would be incredible to be able to also from a cultural reference point, I think languages give you so much more understanding of a culture and of a place. But yeah, I suppose their fear at the time was that if they raised us bilingually, because Creole has broken English throughout it as well, or pidgin English, they felt that then our English wouldn't be so good. So yeah, it's interesting, but I can still understand it, if I hear it spoken. So it's still in there in the subconscious somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. And I can so understand that because for me as well, I'm exactly the same as you, in terms of understanding. Like my understanding is far, far better than my speaking. My speaking is pretty abysmal, to be honest with you. But that's because I was born in Ireland myself, and I kind of had to pick it up through what was happening in the house. So I was listening to the conversations that were going on around me, and my sister, she was born in India, so she has a better understanding and spoken kind of, a grip on the language, I suppose. But I do think it's tricky for parents, isn't it, to decide whether or not to keep those things or whether to let them go in terms of kind of helping you develop
Absolutely.
in whatever country you've moved to.
Yeah, and I think there's so much more knowledge around it now as well. Do you know that it's not going to hinder a child if they are bilingual? In fact, it's only going to be advantageous to them. But yeah, I suppose that understanding wasn't there in the same way at the time. And for us, yeah, just the way things panned out, my father would have gone back to Sierra Leone quite frequently once it was safe to do so. We actually, my mother and myself, my two younger brothers, we came to Ireland alone initially. He was the principal of a theological college out there, and he felt he couldn't leave his students at the time. But we actually left on the last plane, leaving the country. So it was quite a scary thing when we initially came to Ireland and left Dad behind there. But then eventually, the United Nations got involved in the situation, and eventually more flights were able to leave the country over time. And when it got too dangerous, then Dad joined us. But once things did get safe over time, he would return quite frequently, but we didn't until I was about 16. I went back for the first time for a month, and it was just such a culture shock, because my memories from living there were that I truly belonged. I was speaking the language, I'd started school. So I expected when I went back that it would just be this instant assimilation. Whereas it was very different, from the Sierra Leonean's perspective, I was now a white Irish person. And I just didn't account for that at all. So that was actually quite a tough month and experience, just processing all of that, and a real, I suppose, exposure to me of where my identity lies, and just confusion around that. And then we returned again when I was 18 for a month, just before the mocks, the Leaving Cert mocks, and that was better. I processed it more at that stage, but it's still and it, that was a lot easier, but still it's still an assimilation, and sort of a sense of, oh, I feel I belong here a lot more than the people here are acting towards me. I felt a more stronger tie than maybe was being than maybe how I was being accepted, if you get me.
No, I really do. I think that makes
But
sense. Yeah, like the idea of you kind of having this connection to the culture, but also having left it at such a young age when you felt integrated is a very, it's a bit of a trippy experience. It's very weird to go back into a setting that you know innately you felt at home in. And now, your whole life has changed so much.
Yeah, and like all my cultural reference points, you know, were Irish and I sounded Irish and yeah, I suppose, you know, at home we would have eaten a lot of Sierra Leonean food and growing up, you know, we would have gone to Sierra Leonean parties with other Sierra Leoneans in Ireland and things like that. So but yeah, we definitely stood out as different while we were over there, which was just a realization to me that, you know, I suppose being mixed race, wherever you are, you can stand out as different. But more recently then in January last year, myself and my husband and our little girl went out to Sierra Leone with my parents for a month, and I hadn't been back since I was 18. And it honestly was just incredible. You know, it was such a, I suppose at this stage now, you know, I'm at a point where I'm confident in my own self-worth and self-identity. And it was just amazing to bring my family over there and have them see that side of my history and really just interact with it, and yeah, it was just absolutely incredible and a real full circle moment, where I suppose it was a real lesson to me that once you accept yourself, others will accept, you know, how you describe yourself to be or how you profess your identity to be.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful thing. And it's actually like a lovely way to put it, I think, as well. Because it is a real journey. Even, you know, I'll be planning my trip with my husband over to India at some point soon. And I went periodically throughout my childhood since I was four. So I remember, you know, the first time being like the culture shock is insane. And, you know, like even looking around and realizing, a few people who actually have done this, who have left a country, have said this to me. The idea of like, I suppose it's what they kind of were describing is that you left your country at a certain place and you'll always feel like the country's in that place in a way when you go back. And in terms of like that timeline, like, you know, this was my cousin telling me this, and she's in her 40s now, and she left when she got married and went to America. And when she goes back now, it's that feeling of being like, you know, almost 20 odd years since she's left don't really, like, as in, she doesn't, I suppose she's almost like, it's almost like being stunted in a certain place. And I've even found with my parents, you know, like when we're in India, and like, you know, they'd be kind of more inclined to stick to wearing more traditional clothing and stick to eating traditional food. They have absolutely no interest in the anglicized version of anything. Like, you know, they don't want to be going to KFC. They don't want to be, you know, shopping in shops. They can shop in at home. They want like the really traditional food. And you know, they're happy wearing their traditional clothes. And you know, I think they kind of, it's interesting to I think that nearly makes them stand out more in a way than if
Oh,
they,
interesting.
yeah, it's kind of a mix of both. It's like someone will be speaking to my parents and they'll be speaking in Pamul, and even then that person will know that my parents lived outside the country. They know, you know, and
And
I don't,
they're,
they don't even know how they know, but they know.
yeah. And I suppose they're fully immersing themselves, you know, it's their opportunity. But yeah, that's so interesting. And it's the same in Sierra Leone, where, you know, a lot of the dress is becoming a lot more westernized. And you know, I know for my father that he would have a sense that, I don't know, I don't want to speak for him either, but you know, I know, it's more obvious now as well, after years and years of living in Ireland, it's more obvious that he's more westernized. You know, even little things might frustrate him a little bit more, you know, if the electricity goes out, or that, you know, when you're used to a different type of a lifestyle here as well. You know, you love the village, you love to return to the village, but also, and you love to return to the country, but also you have just a broader perspective on things. So yeah, you're always sort of pushing and pulling and tugging and pulling between the two sides, I suppose.
Definitely. And especially, I suppose, with the way that you guys left, because you had to leave so suddenly, that's a really, like, that's a real kind of tear away from your culture. And like what your dad did was so brave. And, you know, staying there defending his students, like, that is a really brave thing to do. But it also means that, like, all of you left kind of in a place where you couldn't really tidy anything up. You weren't planning on this.
And I always think for Dad, you know, we're always so grateful that he joined us and stayed with us as well, because I think in a lot of situations like that, the husband could eventually return to his country.
Yes.
So yeah, we were so blessed that he's chosen to really just be where the family is and stay where the family is, despite always missing his home. He'll always see Sierra Leone as his home. He's actually there at the moment. He's in the village as we speak. So
Oh,
he's
wow.
just he's there for a few months at the moment. And yeah, it'll always be his home. So yeah, it
Yeah.
is a huge sacrifice, like a life sacrifice. When my parents got married, they assumed that they would live in Sierra Leone for their lifetime. When mum married dad, that's what she was, had decided, had was aware that she was marrying into. And yeah, so life just doesn't always pan out the way you plan. And yeah, so we're just so grateful to him as well.
Yeah, of course. And I suppose we'll come back to speech and language therapy as well. I had a big digress there because I genuinely did want to know
Yeah,
about
I'm
your
delighted
background.
to have chatted through that.
Yeah, it's also cool. It's always lovely for me. There are so few people of color in allied health, like there really are. So it's always nice for me to meet somebody who has, kind of a similar experience of feeling like a bit of an outsider too. Which obviously is unfair, but it is the way it is. And I suppose I'm just wondering from your perspective, did you were you aware that the course that you were entering when you were in college and you're thinking about allied health, because it's not that different in dietetics too. I think allied health generally is predominantly female and predominantly white. And did you know this, or was it something you would have been aware of in school, or was it something that even mattered to you when you were deciding what you did?
I was really lucky to be in a school that was quite multicultural. We had a load of international students, and like I suppose multiculturalism was encouraged. I remember every Christmas on the 6th of December, the German boarders would ask us to put our shoes outside the door during the night so that they could put little
Lovely.
gifts in our shoes, the next morning and things. It was so normal for us in school to accept other cultures and for me to see people from Africa, people from Asia, people from your all, all over the world, really. So I didn't actually think about it, even though I was used to being, growing up. We were, it was so rare for me to see another black person, never mind another mixed race person. If I ever saw another mixed race person, I'd be nearly craning my neck to see what's their hair like, wow, I wonder where they're from. And, I just was so fascinated. And so it's not that it was unusual for me to be the only black or brown person in the room, but I definitely, when I reached college, it was notable to me. I hadn't thought of it until I was in the situation. It was notable how female dominated it was because I'd been in a mixed school, and it was also notable how I was the only brown person in the whole throughout the whole course, from first to fourth year. So I was more self-conscious about it then. You're making this new transition, you're trying to make new friends. I have to say, I never felt got any negativity ever from any of the other students or lecturers or anything like that. But just internally for me, I could see that I was the only brown person, and I'd be asked things a lot more, like asked a lot more, where are you from? And you'd find yourself nearly delving, having to delve deep into your family history to really let people have a true sense of who you were. And it just felt, I think curiosity and asking questions is really, really good, but I suppose when you're asked over and over and you're in that sphere of being more self-conscious, in your early 20s, it just was a lot. And there was one time, this is more funny than anything, but I remember a couple of weeks into first year, the girls, we were all hanging out on the corridor, and the girls were a little bit hesitant, but clearly looking to ask me something. And they wanted to know if I was a princess from my tribe in Sierra Leone.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
I know, because one of my guy friends who had boarded with had a mutual friend within the course to, find out we were in the same course together. So thought he'd wind up this girl and just like spin this little story, see how far it could go. And obviously, this huge disappointment to them that I wasn't, but like it's just an example of how different you come across to someone, that There's just a real mystery there. It's just, it is, you just are so aware of how different you are and how you stand out that way, which sometimes you just want to blend in. And there isn't really that luxury of being able to blend in. And I remember feeling that I would be trying, I lived in Galway at the time, and I remember feeling like I really wanted to lean into that and just almost justify my Irishness to really feel I could blend or fit in more,
Yes.
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a really tough position to be in. And I think a lot of kids are in that position. You know, I have friends who are very similar to me in that way. I was really lucky. Our parents, college friends, all have kids who are kind of around the same age as us, all immigrated either as really small kids or, you know, were born in whatever country their parents moved to. And we all have quite similar experiences. And one of the big ones is, you know, that idea of now unpacking what it means to lean further into your Irishness instead of leaning into whatever culture it is, you know, your parents are from. It there's a guilt, I think, that you can feel with that, where you look back on it and you're like, okay, I get why I did that. And a huge part of it is because I genuinely am really proud of being Irish, but also a huge part of it was because I wanted people to believe that I was Irish.
It's there's definitely a sense of feeling you need to prove yourself a lot. I feel that a lot throughout my work. And it's an interesting, you know, tug of war for me, because internally, the older I get, the more I want to actually lean into my Sierra Leonean side. The more, you know, we've named our kids, we've given them their tribal first name,
Beautiful.
just to, denote whether they're first daughter, first son, whatever, you know,
Lovely. That's a really amazing thing to
because
do.
we just really, I really don't want my kids to, I'm aware that they'll grow up looking more Irish, and thankfully that means they won't have the same challenges and difficulties, but I don't want them to forget that they're a quarter Sierra Leonean. Do you know, it's
Yes.
so important to me. And I feel, because my accent is Irish, that you nearly have the sense that the Africans amongst us would think, oh, she's not African at all, you know.
Yes.
And I really want to fight against that and say, well, no, I am actually, you know, I've lived in Sierra Leone, I've spoken the language, I've gone to school there. When I was younger, yes, most of my life has been in Ireland, but my Sierra Leonean heritage is a huge aspect of who I am. And to dull that down, there is, you're right, there's a sense of guilt that, like, that's almost proclaiming that my mother's side is more important than my dad's side, and reducing that half of myself. Yet at the same time, in order to survive and thrive within the working but the prof your professional life, you really do need find yourself needing to lean into the Irishness, to be accepted. And that's something I really, it does drain on you over time.
Of course. And can I ask, like, just because that's a really interesting point, but it is actually, it's really sad. And I completely understand where you're coming from, but I'm just wondering if you could kind of explain that a little bit more. Like, when you lean into your Irishness, is that something that you felt you had to do more, like, as in, was that more through college? Was that something that you feel you have to do more in your professional life, or was it both?
It was, I would say it was both, but not so much, more so in my working life.
Yes.
I started off, I've worked in the acute setting for years, and thankfully, the acute setting, there is a lot more diversity because you have a lot of doctors and nurses, healthcare assistants, people who've come from abroad. But I still would have experienced, challenges with service users within the acute setting. But since I've moved into the community setting in particular, because, at times you're going into people's homes for home visits, you're going into rural areas, I've really, in the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, experienced a lot more negativity, and therefore just this huge need to. It's like you're needing to jump over these invisible obstacles that other colleagues aren't seeing before you can even get a starting point of rapport. And as you know, rapport is so important to that client therapeutic relationship and to having good outcomes. If you start off with not great rapport, it's very hard to work with someone and for them to trust you and to, your work here, caregivers. So trust is such a huge aspect of what we do. And it's amazing, I can have a phone call with someone and have fantastic rapport, and because they're not aware of my color by hearing my voice,
Yes.
which you could say is an advantage that a lot of other people working in the healthcare system,
Don't have.
must be even more difficult for them to get that starting foot even. And the very same person could come into the waiting room and see me, and you immediately know within the first few seconds. It's a look in the eye or an uncertainty, and sometimes even a fear, for more elderly people. And it's so hurtful, just because they've seen what you look like and that your color is different. And there's an immediate mistrust sometimes. And in that instance, I find myself really pushing into the just Irish colloquialisms and just,
Yes.
trying to prove like it's okay, you're safe with me, you can trust me, I'm the same as you, I just look a bit different, which is awful. Like it's so terrible that someone would need to do that. And I've met incredible people as I've throughout my career, but it's those I would say, for my initial interactions with clients, it could be as frequent as every one in five that there's that little bit of, where I've discerned, okay, this person needs me to lean into my Irishness so that they'll feel more comfortable to work with me. And it does, over time really burn you out in a sense, like
Yes.
emotionally drain you or burn you out. And it's a very lonely experience because nobody else can understand what it's like unless they're in it and unless they've lived that lifetime, that life experience. And you don't want to, you can be afraid to say anything because you don't want to seem like you're making a mountain out of a molehill, but we all know when we're in the situation, don't we? Like
Oh,
it's very
absolutely, yeah.
obvious to our, and you can really discern it, but it's so subtle at times that it's hard to put words on it. And more in the last year, I have been more open in sharing with my colleagues, and because I feel really passionate about the fact that there needs to be awareness of this. I feel that within our healthcare professions and allied health, it's really drilled into us that we have a duty of care to our clients. But as time moves on, I think, but what about the duty of care to our colleagues, to our staff members, as well? So yeah, it's a very vulnerable thing. As you can tell, I've lots to say on it. Like
No,
it's
honestly,
a very vulnerable thing.
I really appreciate you sharing your experience. And also, I do want to say that it's my experience too in loads and loads of ways. Like, as in, especially what you said about the people talking to you on the phone and then seeing you in person thing. It's just, it is often a disaster. When people aren't expecting you at all, they don't assume it's you. And then there's this really confusing like connection that you have, especially I find for myself, I'm sure you have this yourself with your relatives, that like I don't, me and my sister, to be fair, we both sound similar, but neither of us sound like our parents necessarily, because they lived in India, then they lived here, and they still have like part of their Indian accent, and like it's softened out over the years, but like it's still there, because I think with the stronger accents they tend to stick. And I love that about them. I'm so happy they have that. But as a kid, I remember thinking they have it tougher than I do, as in like it's another hurdle and it's another thing that separates them from people. And half the time, like there are times when you can leave interactions feeling kind of icky because you made yourself look like you were, the Lucky Charms leprechaun. In order to get somebody to like you and to understand you and talk to you and tell you about something, and we shouldn't have to do that. And I think that experience is the part of the reason I wanted to do this is because I wanted people to hear about what that's like, because it really takes an emotional toll. And I don't think in Ireland we really talk about it much.
No, I think that there is a fear of there's this phrase that I really hate, and it's, playing the race card.
Yes.
And what that does is it devalues your experience, and it's like, with bullying, the best thing to do with bullying is to shine a light on it. Whereas if you're kind of taught that you shouldn't talk about these things, it enables it to breed and fester more. And I suppose with conversations like this, it's important for the reason, initially I was thinking, like, in all honesty, I was thinking, but how many people does this really impact? Because for me, within the SLT community, for example, because
Yes.
for me, I don't actually know anyone else who is black or brown within the SLT community. If there are any out there, please get in touch. So I know there's more of us, but like, I honestly, so I felt like, is this just an issue I need to deal with myself? Like, what's the point nearly? But
Yes.
actually, for people who, and like yourself, born in Ireland, but have parents who moved here, and yet you're going to still experience all of these issues. Sorry, Divya.
Not at all.
Baby's
And for
crying.
anybody that's listening, that's Abby's lovely baby. And
He slept up until now.
he's been here the whole time, so he's done really well.
Thank you. He might actually settle back to sleep here. I think he just stirred. But yeah, I suppose there needs to be that awareness, because there are a lot of micro aggressions and obstacles we sort of jump through, but there are also bigger issues that can crop up too, that are more rare but do happen. And when that happens, I think it's important for our colleagues to understand that this isn't an out of the blue moment, but there have been a lot of little things happening over time. So our colleagues are tired, from it. And I've had, in the last year, in particular, there was an instance where a client was very openly against working with any healthcare professional that wasn't Caucasian.
Yes.
And he was my client. He came into, he was in my network, in my area, and between management and everything, we had to come up with strategies in order to make this work. And I ended up having a junior colleague of mine sit in on the session to be able to witness anything and just to back me up if anything happened. But the fear I had going into that session, and the absolute it took such a toll on me. Honestly, I still have I still, feel very strongly emotionally about that whole situation.
Yeah, that's a really awful situation to be in, but also I think it's really important to highlight that that's not your job. Like, that's not what you're here
No.
to do every day. You're not here to change minds. You're here to help people with speech and language
Exactly.
therapy. And, I think that's part of why I feel like it's really important that you share this experience, is because I think you're doing another job on top of everything else. And also leaving, like, when you leave, you have to go home and deal with those emotions. And that can be a really, really tough, like, I've been there. I really have. And I completely know what it's like to be in those situations where either you're blindsided or a person is racist and you're just gonna have to deal with them.
Yeah, it's
And
devastating,
it
honestly. Like
is.
it's and it does it. You go home and your husband hears all about your
Yes.
experience, and you cry, and you have to pick yourself up and go back in the next day. But you start to then build this sort of a, you realize that you don't, I suppose clinically you don't know, you have your medical history and you have your referral form and everything, but clinically, things could get thrown up in the initial assessment that you weren't aware of or whatever. But it's this extra layer that you don't know who is going to walk in and how they're going to react towards you.
Yes.
And it is difficult. And after a session like that, very likely you go on with your day, you go on to the next client, and your colleagues around you don't know what you've been through, to what extent, that's hurt or damaged you. And I suppose that's why I think this awareness is so important in due to situations like that. And I've had, where I've arrived at people's home and they've been nearly disgusted that I'm walking through the door, into their private space, into their home. I feel that it does take its toll. And I've had moments where this year where I have broken down with my manager, with colleagues, and it's very exposing. It feels very exposing of yourself. It's such a personal thing. And for me, I'm a bit of an overthinker. So then I do think, have I shown too much of myself? Have I, was that professional enough? But it builds up over time until it reaches that moment. And it's just, I think it's important for the HSE staff and community as a whole to understand that these are private battles and private challenges that people of color are going through on a daily basis. And there's only a certain level of tolerance or capacity you can have for that, on top of all the, clinical challenges or, and the caregiving. I just think conversations like this are so important to just start to build that awareness amongst the HSE staff and community as a whole, that this does go on behind the scenes.
And this is also how we can support our colleagues in the situation where, like, and I completely get where you're coming from. And in terms of feeling like maybe worrying when you come home, overthinking, worrying about whether you were being unprofessional. But like also when it comes to people's responses as well, like, I've been in situations where I've come into work and people like, 9 out of 10 people said, "Are you sure that person meant it that way?" And it's the worst feeling. Like it's like another gut punch when you hear that phrase. It's like, no, it doesn't really matter how they meant it. It was racist when they said it though. Do you know what I mean? It's just a really
Absolutely.
difficult position to be in, I think. And what you're describing about, going to colleagues and stuff like that, it feels like you have to build up an armor, but there is this aspect of, this very private, very personal experience and journey that you've had with, your race and, your identity. And then having to kind of face it publicly head on in settings where you just weren't expecting to at all.
And in a session where you just want to do your job, you just
Yes,
want
of
to,
course.
and we're in this to care. I do feel within the allied health professions, we're there to help people, and that's innately what you want to do. And you're stretching yourself and adapting yourself and molding yourself and kind of shifting and changing yourself in order to make yourself acceptable to be able to care for someone. And that's really hard to reckon with. When
Absolutely.
ultimately it's helping you're doing with someone, that you'd hope
Yes.
you're doing. It's really, I feel that in order to survive in a caregiving profession with these challenges long term, you need to be so strong in your own self identity and self worth, but also you need to consciously maintain that, because it's constantly being chipped away at or challenged in little ways. And if you excuse everyone as, oh, they just aren't aware, or they're just more elderly, or they're just not used to seeing, I don't know, I suppose it just, I don't know, it feels a little like gaslighting in a sense,
It
doesn't it,
does definitely. And
Hannah?
also it's like Ireland is a little bit new to these issues in a way that like the UK isn't and the US isn't. Like I remember when I was I'll keep this brief, but like I'll remember when I was 12 I went to Boston to go visit my uncle and it was just me that went over and I was staying at my cousin's and I remember telling people I was Irish, and it was the most freeing thing in the world. I was so excited about it. Everybody believed me.
They
Everybody
accepted
believed me.
you.
They looked at me. I said the thing. There was no flinch. There was no follow-up question. It was just that. And then it's funny now because I'm a Donegal woman now. But when I was in, I went to a shop and it was raining outside. We were all standing inside the doorway, and there was a woman there, and I heard an Irish accent, and I was like, I think that's a Donegal accent. And I was like looking at her. I was like, "Are you from Ireland?" And she was like, "Yeah." And I was like, "I am too." And she was the woman that didn't believe me because she actually lived here. And you know, it was that thing of like when you're in the UK or in the US, you know, when you see a person of color and they tell you where they're from, their nationality isn't automatically linked to their race.
Exactly. And it's not questioned, you know, it's not,
Yes.
you know, if someone tells you where they're from, like what right has anyone to say, well, no, you're not
Exactly.
actually.
Yeah,
Like,
I
you
don't
know,
think, where are you
how does
really
anyone
from?
know?
Yes.
Yeah, and I find that's true. Like when you're talking about Boston there, I was thinking of yeah, the UK and London, and yeah, it's so multicultural, but yeah, so accepted that you know all these people are from London or you know wherever they say they're from, and
Absolutely.
it's, the landscape is just different. And yeah, I feel we are a little bit behind in that way, but that's why it's so amazing to have yeah conversations like these, and even to know that you yourself, you know, you know a lot of people who are in a similar situation, that their parents have come here and they've grown up here, and yeah, these conversations are so important, and to broadcast that, you know.
For sure. And I just wanted to go back to something you said earlier about, so just in relation to your course in speech and language therapy, you said that you were the only person of color in the 4 years that you knew of. Like, was that, like, do you have any kind of insights into why the course might be that way? Or like, is there something that, you know, I suppose we could be doing, you know, like, you know, maybe the ISLT could work on, or like other SLT organizations could work on in relation to kind of promoting, you know, this course to other people? Or do you have any idea why it might be that way in the first place?
You know, I think in the grand scheme of things, speech language therapy is a fairly new
Yes.
profession, you know. And I think just the cultural demographics in Ireland have, I think the landscape has shifted a lot in the last 20 years. So I do think it's just organically, you know, part of it's, you know, I started into college in 2008, and I do think it's just a natural aspect of the environment we live in. But I do think nowadays there are going to be a lot more, there's going to be a lot more cultural diversity within the profession just organically. And you know, I know when we lived in Galway, we knew a lot of families there from Nigeria, from you know all parts of Africa who had children born, and at that stage now those kids are now you know entering the workforce, and it's people like that who will start into the profession. So I don't think there's necessarily anything that needs to be done, but I do think that internally starting to create this awareness and this conversation means that when people like that ask questions or are curious about professions, and you know, for example, if one of those girls came to me and said, "What's it like to work in speech therapy? You know, would you recommend it, etc.?" I think it's good for us to be able to say, "Well, look, there can be challenges, like in any sphere of life, you know,
Yes.
but you know, the profession has a really positive approach to it, and from a collegial point of view, you know, we talk about these things, and you can share these things, and people are open to it." And I do have to say that, you know, I've never experienced any negativity from colleagues,
I'm delighted to hear
either
that.
within
That's amazing.
SLT or other health professions. Like, and that's a huge thing. And when I at the times I have been open about it to people, they've been shocked, but also really gentle in their responses, really, you know, given me space to talk and have really listened to what I'm saying. And that's something I feel is really positive, and is an important aspect of encouraging other people to be happy to enter into profession, you know.
Definitely. I think the most important thing there is like you can't, because at the end of the day, you know, we serve the people in that need us, I suppose. So like at the end of the day, you can't do anything about the client necessarily, but it's about what happens after, what happens when it comes to kind of, you know, having that discussion about this horrible situation that you were in, or, you know, whether or not you can like have a little breakdown and have a little cry with your manager. All of those things really matter. And I'm really heart like it's really heartening to hear that, you know, you've been treated well within, you know, your profession, and you feel like your colleagues are actually good to you, because I think that's more than half the battle, pardon me. It's more than half the battle to
Absolutely.
be able to have that kind of connection with people and be able to not feel isolated in your experience.
Absolutely. And I, you know, stories travel, and the way I see it as well is that, you know, each healthcare professional has their own family and has their own parents and has elderly relatives, and stories travel. And at some point, we're all patients as well, or we're all clients.
Yes.
And, you know, with the next generation, if somebody comes up to their home, you never know what stories those more elderly people have heard
Yeah.
and the difference in how they'll respond to someone of color walking up to their door than perhaps if they hadn't heard stories or, I just think story and testimony is such a powerful tool for changing people's mindsets and attitudes. And, as the cultural demographic shifts as well, our service users, we're going to have a lot more service users from other places, other cultures. And it's important for us as clinicians to also know the context of how they have experienced life in Ireland, and
Yes.
therefore why there may actually be for Irish colleagues, when I say Irish, I mean Caucasian Irish colleagues,
Yeah.
little obstacles for them to jump through in terms of gaining trust, but for them to understand a context there as to why that may be. And I just think overall context and experiences, all of that being shared, just humanizes everything and makes people more acceptance of difference. And
Yeah, for sure. And I suppose I feel like this question at this point is a bit redundant, but I do kind of want to know when is this the first time you experienced feeling like a minority when you went into college in that way? I guess I'm wondering, because you went to a school that was more multicultural and you had people around you that were people of color, was, being dropped in at 18 to your college course, the first time you kind of had that experience of feeling like you were the only person of color, or
I've experienced it in as a younger child, but
yeah.
funny enough, it didn't bother me in the same way. It was just, I don't know why,
That's
and I suppose
interesting.
kids are more accepting too.
Yes.
And it's more when you're in secondary school that, you start kind of looking
Yeah.
into yourself and your identity and things like that, I think. And so I had a really positive secondary school experience then. Like, my husband always jokes, goodness, it's like that was the best time of your life, like being in secondary school. But I just honestly felt like that was my home, like my family, like I truly belonged there. And it was only actually through thinking about this conversation that I thought of the fact that maybe that's due to the multicultural aspect and openness from my peers at that stage. I never it didn't bother me or hugely in college, but I was more aware of it then. But certainly since working, I suppose it's ramped up to a point where I like, in a way, I've never experienced it as strongly as this.
Yes.
And I suppose in my initial years of working, I just tried to brush it off and be like, okay, well, that's just life. I just have to deal with this, and that's fine. And I would really, I really just try to brush it off. But I do think years and years of layering and of experiences, and the older you get, the more confident you become in who you are, and the more you don't want to just take it, I suppose, but you want
Yeah.
to actually stand up for, well, no, that's actually not right, and we actually do need to make a change here, and we need to try and shift attitudes and change perspectives and create awareness. Whereas before, I would have just accepted it and dealt with it privately,
Of course, I think it's more about feeling supported enough that you can come out and talk about these things and actually, have that conversation. And I think you made an interesting point about how things will get more multicultural and more integrated as time goes on. I do think we're kind of, at the forefront of those things happening in Ireland in a lot of ways, kind of being
Absolutely.
some of the first people of color to kind of go through a profession, to have an Irish accent, to, appear differently to other people, I suppose is the best way to put it. But I do think,
Absolutely.
it's you know, I'm hoping, I really do believe, you know, for my nieces and for, you know, for your kids, that like it'll be that bit easier because, you know, people have had a chance to understand the culture, be a bit more inclusive, understand that, you know, we're still in a place where, you know, if you look different, that is going to be something that's acknowledged.
Exactly. And I do think it'll shift. And I think it's positive to see places like the UK and to know that, you know, that landscape and that can be a normal thing. But you're right. I do think, you know, we're amongst the first generation of people with Irish accents living their full lives here. And I know my dad has had immense challenges, and he was really a first in so many ways. And yeah, things are easier for us, but there are invisible barriers, and sometimes invisible barriers are harder to push away because they're so invisible, you know, so you can't, from an external or an objective point of view, someone can't say, oh, that's wrong, you know, because it's so private and subtly done, and there's subtle experiences that it's very hard to reduce that. And I think the only way is for there to be more exposure in, you know, individual stories or, you know, and or experiences, and slowly for the tide to shift, in a sense, you know.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think it is about sharing experiences, and like I do believe what, you know, what you said earlier about storytelling being so powerful. I really do think that it's the way to go, because it's kind of sometimes it's the only way that you can make someone fully understand, you know, where you're coming from. And I do think, you know, I hope a conversation like this as well helps people who might be thinking of saying something like, are you sure somebody meant it that way? Are you sure, you know, that was meant to be racist or something, or meant to be homophobic, or, you know, ableist, whatever it is. You know, I hope it makes them consider, like, reconsider saying that, because I do think it's worth saying just that, like, when a person like you or me comes forward and says something has happened, it's already taken an awful lot of internal processing to get to that point. It's not playing race card at all. It's a thing of, you know, I need to sit down and think about this. Is it worth telling, you know, my white colleague or my white manager or whoever it is? Is it worth that? Because I know they're coming at it from a different experience to me.
It's really tough to come to say something, you know. It's really it takes a lot of yourself, so you've gotten to a point already where it's now necessary. So yeah, just for people to kind of hold that with grace. And you know, there are instances, you know, where someone will, you know, I'm just thinking recently I said, and this wasn't in work, but I said to something, oh yeah, no, I'm grand. And they said, oh, you'd know, you've been in Ireland now for a few years to be saying that, you know, that sort of way. And but I knew that there was no bad intent there. And it so didn't, like, it's, you know, it's a little bit, can be a little bit irritating depending on on your day, but you know, it didn't offend me in any huge way. So I think it's important to say as well that, you know, we do see, you know, on the other end, we do hold a grace for people
Yes, for
not
sure.
knowing as much.
Absolutely.
But also, you know, what usually I think when something is said, you know, when we come forward to our colleagues or share or, you know, feel down or upset about something, it's usually because it was clear that there was a feeling there of being considered less than or other in a negative way. So to take that seriously. And yeah, I have to say as well that it's, you know, it's not all negative. There's one, I'd love to just tell you the story about one client of mine, because
Absolutely.
she honestly was, and the timing as well, you know, I think was God-given, because the timing of it was so soon after my such a negative experience I'd had, that I mentioned earlier. But this lady, I was just giving her a phone call about a review in a number of months' time, just explaining to her that I was going to be going to Sierra Leone for the month with my family. And she honestly was an absolute diamond. She just was expressing so emphatically down the phone about how, that's incredible. I'm so glad you're bringing your family there. I'm so glad you're bringing your child there. That's so important. You need to show them your heritage, your history. I'm so glad you're doing that.
That's sweet.
She just went, and she was saying, like, from one mother to another mother, it's important for your children. She just was an absolute gem. And so throughout this conversation, we're highlighting the challenges, but yeah, I think it's important to say as well that there are people out there who are so open and so just, they accept everyone equally. And I'll never forget that conversation. Like, I don't think she'll ever know how much her words meant to me. But it was just a part of who she was. And there's Brian now getting excited.
No, but absolutely, like that. I'm sure that woman doesn't realize what impact or the impact that she had on you, and how much you needed to hear that in that moment as well. I think it does say something about how powerful people's words are, I suppose. Regardless of whether
Absolutely.
they're positive or negative, I mean, I think like it's about thinking about what you say before you say it, I guess.
Yeah,
And also,
absolutely.
believing that, if you think something like that as well, like it was really lovely that she decided to share that with you, that she actually felt that strongly about it, because not everybody's going to do that. And she couldn't have known it was going to impact you in the way it did, but like the fact that someone's willing to extend a little bit of kindness, it always can go that little bit further than someone knows.
It makes a huge difference. And that lady had, we'd had conversations and sessions, and she, as far as I know, she didn't have any, closer familial, ties to people of any multicultural descent. She just was an Irish woman who just was so open and so open to the richness of having people of different cultures, different languages, different experiences. Like, she was just so open to how that makes life so much more rich. And I think that was just a beautiful way for her to see life. And yeah, absolutely, made a huge impact on me, after everything I'd already experienced.
Of course. And do you think yourself there are supports that we could put in place to like empower minority groups? I know what you're saying about people sharing their stories and stuff, but I guess we're looking at across the board, SLT is pretty female dominated and pretty dominated by white women generally, like white people, but also white women specifically. So I guess what we're looking at is, making it less gendered as well as, trying to be inclusive towards other minority groups. So is there anything that you can think of that might empower minority groups, and maybe promote awareness within the profession, or potentially, like, it could be a case of kind of doing that work a little bit earlier, maybe around the TY to leaving cert stage, or, I'm just curious about what your thoughts on yourself having come through the process.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I know there is a HSC cultural diversity network, and it's not SLT specific, but it's for the HSC staff and community as a whole. And that is a wonderful group, where we brainstorm, we break off into groups, brainstorm on various challenges, even for people, coming here from abroad, just challenges integrating into Ireland, into the professional culture here, and try to think of ideas on ways to spread awareness on these issues and challenges as well. So that's a great group. And I joined that group before going on my maternity leave, and so I just attended a few meetings there. And I just, for me personally, to see on the Zoom call so many people from different cultures within my employer's community, was even just seeing that was a huge boost for me. So yeah, I'd really encourage people to join the HSC Cultural Diversity Network. But also, I do wonder if it's something that should be a mandatory training even for staff, on if that was something that could be developed down the line, culturally diversity training. But I, yeah, from a student and transgender point of view, I think it would be useful to have people like myself and yourself, talk, go out there and talk on these experiences openly. Within HSE groups, it's common to have, CPD days or journal clubs and team meetings and things like that. And I think even space for days which are a little less clinically focused and just where we can share our own personal challenges or experiences within the profession as a whole, it doesn't specifically narrow it to cultural diversity, but I'm sure there are other minority groups and other things that I'm not aware of, where it just gives a platform for us all to be open to listening to each other and sharing, and would make each clinician feel less alone in whatever personal issues or challenges they face. Yeah, I think those aspects would certainly be a good start,
Yeah, definitely. Like it's, sharing experiences, getting, I suppose, what you said, I think something really valuable that you said as well was the idea of like kind of maybe having some sort of training in relation to maybe, in your third or fourth year of college or something, could be a time to target people and get them. Like, I suppose it's about maybe explaining that when you peel off into the workforce, it's not going to be the same experience for every person. If you're from a minority group, if you look different in any kind of way, if your experience is different, there might be people who are not accepting of that. And just explaining that to your colleagues so that they're able to support each other, that I think that's a really, really good point. And also, yeah, definitely getting people like me and you that go out and have those conversations and talk to students, who are maybe coming up through the leaving cert process and thinking about what careers they want to do and or where they want to go. And I think that's a really good place to target students and kind of have that conversation and just get the ball rolling a little bit.
Exactly. And I think, there's an aspect of sharing where, because it's such an can be such an individualized experience, you nearly feel guilty for sharing to someone that you've put this uncomfortability on them.
Yes,
So
absolutely.
that's something that then you carry on top of everything else. And I think that as a result, like, if something like this was conversations like this happened or training at the college stage, if then down the line, a colleague comes to another colleague and says, "Look, I'm actually finding this really difficult," or "This just happened in a session," that it wouldn't be so uncomfortable for the person on the receiving end to hear, to hear that information. Just that
We've got
it's
agreement.
hello, Jessica. said, "I want to be on the podcast too, mommy."
Yes.
But yeah, it just yeah, I think just to make it not such a taboo topic, really.
Absolutely. And the way that a person receives you in that context is so important. And, people like, you and me going and telling these stories, it's hard. I don't know if you felt this way, but I know for myself, I definitely felt like I was a bit of a burden in terms of the fact that I was carrying all this baggage. Even coming home to my husband, I would feel like that because I'm like, oh, I have another racist story today. It's just it's a crap way to live. And I think telling these stories and communicating with other people in similar situations does really make you feel like, okay, this isn't my problem. It's not my fault that the world receives me in this way.
And that's so interesting how you, because I know, like, literally even yesterday I said to my husband about something. I said, maybe I'm too much because I have to deal with these things. Maybe I'm
Absolutely.
too
Yeah,
much
I
to
so
handle.
get that.
And yeah, and he was like, no, like, but it's another thing that really was fascinating to me was and how desensitized we can become to it as well at times. My husband is from Coleraine up north, and so he has his own, he's culturally adapting here as
Yes.
well. And but we were up north in a different county up north, and went into a shop, a little cafe. It was a small town, and it was a me it was just obvious as soon as we walked in that I wasn't welcome in there, and that was,
Yeah.
but whatever, for whatever reason that day, I was fine. I was like, okay, grand, whatever. It's not my
Yeah.
problem, and it didn't
Yeah.
really impact on me that much. But my husband, it was his first time truly experiencing the feeling, because he was there associated with me. And it wasn't a story he was hearing, but he was actually in the
Yeah.
situation. He was horrified. And it really impacted him. And it stood out to me how strongly he felt about it, and how it made him feel. It's like he was getting firsthand experience, in a sense.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
it just, yeah, it did highlight to me how, no matter how, my husband has lived in Africa for periods of a time before meeting me, he's very culturally, open and aware and things, but it just showed me that no matter how much someone is so open and culturally exposed, it is really hard to fully understand until you've properly experienced it. So just to have that leads back to having grace for people's stories as well, because there is a level that won't be understood unless you've experienced it yourself,
Absolutely. I completely get you. And yeah, I really do understand, like, that must be a really tough situation. And it is a really, like, I've been there myself, where, Owen and my husband has experienced that, where he's, standing beside me and experiencing this situation that he could never imagine. Even that thing of trusting somebody when they know that the setting isn't that much isn't very comfortable for them. Do you know what I mean? As in, it's a very tricky situation, but I suppose it's trusting people in their own experiences is something that's really important in terms of kind of respecting people's experiences.
Not questioning it, not
Yes.
reframing it for them, but just saying, okay, that's what you've experienced. I believe you. That's really, really tough. And how are we going to move forward and work through it,
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And my heart hurt a little bit for your husband there, because I can so see that being like a really tough situation where you're looking around, this is happening, and there's nothing you can do about it, and this is the person you love the most in the world. So it's, there is an aspect of that that really is tough on partners and husbands and spouses, anybody in that situation, so
Absolutely.
yeah, it's something that we just, I think, overall need to be talking about more.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I think, yeah, I think that, yeah, people who are married to people like us as well, yeah, they do. They take on a whole layer and level, they take that on alongside us,
Exactly. And I think it's obviously we're doing that with grace, knowing that our experience is worse, but at the same time, it's still, it's about, I suppose, somebody being close enough. For me, essentially, like Owen is the closest white person to me that's ever, been around me and experienced these things, at least hearing about them firsthand. Whether he sees it, he might see it, but it could be, a case that I'm just coming home and talking about it. I know that for both of us, this is something that has ne had never happened before it happened between us. So it's a very unique and individual experience, I think, as well, for a lot of us. And
Absolutely.
what we do at home is what we want to be doing every day in our, in our public lives, where we can kind of have that bit of grace. People are, being kind and understanding, and also aware that, your experience is different to theirs.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I really feel lucky, to be honest, the group I'm in at work at the moment, the from a service user point of view, I come across
Yeah.
different experiences, but honestly, they're fantastic. And I know it's not like that in every workplace, say, but it definitely makes a huge difference to know that if you did bring something, people are gonna at the very least listen and try to make you feel better around it.
Definitely. And I just wanted to shout out another podcast because I thought this would be good for you as well. It's SLT Time, so it's SL and then TEA Time. And
Oh,
it's people, SLTs of color. And also I think they've got some other like diverse experiences, but like there's a few podcasts in relation to or a few podcast episodes in relation to racism and feeling othered within the SLT community, that
that's
I think
amazing.
they're really like that I found them really cathartic,
Yeah, I
especially going through
honestly
the
have
interview
never heard of.
process, things that like especially yeah the interview process when people aren't expecting you to walk in the room, or so like stuff like that where yeah it's we're not alone basically is where what I'm trying to get at, but I
That's
definitely give them a listen.
fantastic. Thank you. So I that's brilliant. I know your listeners are gonna really enjoy that, but I personally am delighted
I'm
to have heard of
glad.
that. So thank you.
I'm so glad. And is there anything else you'd like to add yourself?
Just, do you know what? Honestly, Divya, just a huge thank you that you've set up this platform. I really feel in the last year like things have shifted. Like, that HSE Cultural Diversity Network has sprung up, and now this as well, and the ISLT having diversity as their one of their priority areas.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly, it gives it encourages me so much, and I do think, please God, it'll be easier for the next generations of SLTs coming through. But yeah, so just a huge thank you for giving me this platform as well to be
Oh,
able to
thank you
share with
so
you.
much. It's been amazing hearing your experiences. I really appreciate it.